So we were talking about two categories of gneva in the framework of Rav Chiya. So if you have a Gemara Bava Kama, which I have one copy of the Gemara Bava Kama. You have one? So you'll take a look again on Daf Dalet Amud Beis. And the Gemara was wondering why Rav Chiya had to add Ganav to the list of Avos Nezikin. Rav Oshia says that Ganav is already included under Shomer. So for example, in the case of a Shomer who denies that he ever received the object, he's virtually a Ganav, and that's based on a statement of Rav Sheshes later on in Masechta Bava Kama that HaKofer B'Pikadon Gazlan Hai. So within the framework of Shoel, we could have a Gazlan. Hence Rav Chiya feels absolutely no compelling reason to add Ganav to his list. He's already got it on the Shomer. Now, in Rav Chiya's case, he has both Shomer and Ganav. So the Gemara explains that there's a fundamental difference between Shoel and Ganav. And that's the last two lines here on Daf Dalet Amud Beis. It says that in the case of Shomer, it's Mamona di Asi Liyadi Leit Betera. So the money came into the Shomer's possession legally. He didn't steal it. And then we have the case of a Ganav, which is Mamona di Asa Liyadi Be'isura. A Ganav is a case where he simply takes something out of the property, out of the possession of someone, and he steals it. So those are the two categories of a Ganav. There's a Shomer who becomes a Ganav, because he refuses to give back the object. But again, it came into his Rishus Beheter. Then there's the Ganav, where he took the object illegally. Now, if you go back to Daf Beis Amud Aleph, we mentioned that the word Maveh in the Mishnah, according to the Maan D'Omer, who says Maveh Zeh Adam, belongs here, wedged in between Bar and Eish, according to Rashi, Kesedosh and Ksubim Beparsha Sidram BeMishnah. In other words, the Mishnah is following the sequence of the Torah. So the Torah starts with Shor, then it goes to Bar, then it goes to Maveh, and then it goes to Hever. So in truth, when you look in the Parsha, what you find is that the Torah goes from Shor to Bar, and the next one of the Mazikim is Eish. In between Bar and Eish, we have Ganav. So Rabbeinu Tam says, and this is the end of the second Tosus in Masechta Bava Kama, he says, Shem Adam Ksiv Beparsha Kodem, Ki Ignov Ishar. So we already have a kind of an Adam HaMazik here, even though again the official Adam HaMazik is not written until later Parsha, that's in Emor. But already here up front in Parshas Mishpatim, the Torah has the Ganav, and the Ganav is already one step closer to Adam HaMazik. So the Rashba asks the following question: if Maveh in the Mishnah is a reference to Ganav, that's the premise of Rabbeinu Tam, so why is it that Rabbi Chiya, in addition to the Arba Avos Nezikim, which includes Maveh, he adds Ganav? Maveh equals Ganav. So it's an absolute repetition. So what we wanted to suggest was that there are two categories of a Ganav. There's a Ganav with Kinyon Igzel and there's a Ganav without Kinyon Igzel. So we want to explain that. So I gave out these pages yesterday, and you can take a look on page Beis on the second side. And yesterday we had a long discussion about Rabbi Kiveiger. We'll touch on that again today, but more important, there's another paragraph here in the name of Rabbi Chaim, and that's Vehine Bechidushe Rabbeinu Chaim al Levi. So you're on page Beis, and you're on the left column, and you're in the second main paragraph. And Rabbi Chaim al Levi in Hilchus Gzela Vaveda explains that when you talk about a chiyuv, a monetary obligation to pay in the case of a ganav or gazlan, you have to really break that down into two categories. In other words, there are two different categories that are included under gneva and gzela. One category is that he has to pay, the ganav has to pay because of the fact that this object came to him through what's called kinyanei gzeila. The Torah actually recognizes a new kind of kinyan. It's called a kinyan gzeila. If a person takes hold of something and removes it from the possession of someone else illegally, violating all the Torah's prohibitions, but nevertheless he does it for the sake of acquiring ownership, then to some extent, paradoxically, he owns the object. He can actually create a kinyan, which is called a kinyan gzela, a new category of kinyan. And as a result of this kinyan, he now has to replace the object. If the object is lost, they'll have to pay for it. And all this is because he has acquired illegally the object of his friend. If his object goes up in value, he only has to pay the value at as it were, set in stone at the moment that he acquired ownership. Because again, his chiyuv is because of the ownership that he acquired as a result of the maisa gneiva, where he takes the object out of the rishus of the nignav and into his own rishus. So that's one category. So if you'd like to underline, you might underline, highlight on the third line down in this paragraph of Hine, just tell me if you have it. On the end of the third line, it says, Al Yidei Kinyanei Gzela. Then he says there's a second obligation, a second category of Gzela, and that's in the absence of a Kinyan Gzela. So whenever there's a Gazon without a Kinyan, he didn't actually take the object, he just makes it impossible for the owner of the object to get access to it. Is that's also called a ganov, and basically this ganov really belongs to what we would call the general concept of mazikim. Mazikim means if I cause you a loss, then I have to pay for that, again under certain circumstances. So too, if a person does this act of gzela, which means he makes it impossible for the person who legally owns the object to get access to the object, even though the gazlan in this case has not implemented a kinyan gzela, but nevertheless he's a mazik, he's causing his friend hefse. So let's take for example the case of a shomer. Now when we talk about a shomer, we can make him into a ganov for one of two reasons. One reason is because he's kofer b'pikadon. That means he denies that he ever received the object. Now we know, because later on witnesses testify to this effect, so we'll find out later on that he actually has the object, you know, locked up. But he never actually took the object out of the reshus of the bailim, because the bailim, the mafkin, gave him the object. That's called behetera osi liyadon. And although the Torah considers him a gazlan, that's only in the sense that he's a mazik. Now that doesn't remove his status as a shomer. As we discussed yesterday in Reb Kivega's frame of reference, he wears two hats. There's an overlap. He's both a shomer and a gazlan.
But I thought you said that when the owner puts the object into the possession of the shomer, the reshus is considered that of the owner.
Right. Up until the point of kofer, of kfira. Once the shomer denies the story, then he's in effect saying that wherever that object is, really it's mine. It was always mine, maybe he's claiming, but it's mine. At that point, the mafkid loses his reshus over the object. The mafkid's possession of the object when it's held by the shomer is conditional on the fact that the shomer is watching it on his behalf. If the shomer is no longer watching on his behalf, he's declared that he never got the object, I'm not watching your object, then the mafkid no longer has reshus over it. So in effect, now the object is in the reshus of the shomer. But the shomer didn't take it into his reshus. There was no kinyan gzela. It was behetera osi liyado. The Torah now considers the shomer as a gazlan to impose upon him additional chiyuvim. What would be a chiyuv of a gazlan that goes beyond that of a shomer? Onus, actually, excellent onus. Onus means if thunder strikes A shomer doesn't have to pay for such a loss. But now that he became a gazlan, the Torah says it's like you destroyed the object. It doesn't matter if you can't replace it for this reason or for that reason. You have an absolute, unconditional chiyuv to pay for the object, even in a case of onus. That's because you are a gazlan. What made you into a gazlan? You never actually took the object out of the rishus, physically out of the rishus of the mafkid, but your claim, which was kofar b'pikada, that makes you into a gazlan. So now you chayv anonsin. Now, let's say the object goes up in value and it gets lost through pshia. What would be the obligation here on his part? Would it be to pay the value of the object at the time of his kfira when he denied that he owed him the pikadon, or would it be the higher value at the time of the loss of the object? Again, we're talking about kofar b'pikadon. So what happened? He was kofar b'pikadon. The object is still stashed away in his corral, wherever it is, the animal's in the pen. And now, through his negligence, the animal gets lost. At the time that the animal got lost, it was worth 12. At the time that he denied that he was kofar b'pikadon, it was only worth 10. What is he going to pay now?
12.
Why does he pay the higher value? Because he's both a shomer and a gazlan. He's a gazlan by virtue of his kofar b'pikadon. But he's also a shomer at the same time, because the fact that he was kofar b'pikadon does not remove his status or alleviate him of his responsibility as a shomer. So now if he doesn't apply the shmir and the object gets lost, he has to pay for the moment that the object got lost as a result of his pshia. That's going to be in the case of kofar b'pikadon. Why? Because this shomer is what he is behetera asiliyado. If he's behetera asiliyado, he never had a kinyan gzela. If he never had a kinyan gzela, he's only chayv as a gazlan by virtue of his kofar b'pikadon, because he's causing a loss to the bailim. That's called a gazlan without a kinyan gzela. And that would fit in. You remember that Reb Chaim had two categories of a gazlan. He had a gazlan who achieved or implemented a kinyan gzela, and then he had another kind of a gazlan who is causing, as a mazik would, a hefsed, a loss to someone else, but he never actually implemented a kinyan gzela. The case of kofar b'pikadon would fit that second category of Reb Chaim, namely that he's considered a gazlan as if he's taking the object, although he never physically took the object. It was behetera asiliyado. He never implemented a kinyan gzela, but he's chayv as a mazik, because he's holding on, he's retaining the object that belongs to the mafkid, he's not letting the mafkid get access to it, he's causing the mafkid a tremendous loss. But although he's a gazlan, and now we're going to impose upon him a chiyuv onsim, but nevertheless, he is still a shomer. Nothing removed his status as a shomer. However, now we're going to talk about another case of a shomer. That's called sholeach yad b'pikadon. In this case, the shomer actually picks up the object and takes it for his own purposes. He relocates the object. What does that generate, Rabosai? What is that called? A maisa gzela, a maisa kinyan. Correct. It's no longer that we consider him like a gazlan because he's causing some loss to, or you know, he's blocking the mafkid from getting access to his object. Now he's actually taken the object out of the rishus of the mafkid and he's brought it into his own rishus. That's called a kinyan gzela. Now, if at the time that he was sholeach yad b'pikadon, the object was worth 10, later on he was poshe and the object got lost and it's worth 12, how much is he going to pay in this case? Only 10. Why? Because now he made a kinyan gzela. If he made a kinyan gzela, then he has been mafkia, means he removed from himself his status as a shomer. Why? Because he's not watching someone else's object. It's now his own object. Because as we said over and over again, the Torah recognizes kinyan gzela. So now, if this be the case, then maybe we could answer our question, which was the Rashba's question on Rabbeinu Tam. We asked the following question. The Mishnah has Mave. Rabbeinu Tam identifies Mave as Ganav. So the Rashba says, well, in Rav Chiya's frame of reference, that's a repetition, because Rav Chiya has Ganav in his list of 24, of his 24 Avos Nezikin. So how can the Mishnah itself in the four, in the original four, has Mava, which is Ganav, and now Rav Chiya is adding in his additional list Ganav? Well, how does he add Ganav to the list of 24 when Ganav is already listed in the Mishnah? The answer is there are two types of Gneva. There's a Gneva without Kinyonim, where, let's say, Shimon is responsible for the fact that Reuven, the owner of the object, is no longer has access to the object. He's causing Reuven, the owner of the object, the loss of the object. That's a Mazik Ganav, a Gazlan who's a Mazik. But he hasn't implemented a Kinyon Gzela. That's the Mava in our Mishnah. Rabbi Chiya is addressing an entirely different, let's call it a full-fledged Ganav. Well, what do you mean a full-fledged Ganav? A full-fledged Ganav means that he has implemented a Maisa Kinyan Gzela. So let's take a look now on page Gimel, on line number 5, on the right column. Do you see where it says Ulam? On page Gimel. Line 5. You see Ulam? He says, Lefish makos of Morana Grachzal, according to Reb Chaim, the Begnevu Gzeli Yeshnei Dine Chiyuv. There are two categories of Chiyuv. Chada, the first category, this is the full-fledged Gazlan, is Chiyuv Hashavas Etzem Gzeli. In other words, he owns the object. Why? Because it was achieved through Kinyani Gzeli. Shenis, the second, which is a lowercase Ganov, or Gazlan, is Al Maisa Gzela, because he did something which the Torah considers a Gzela, but he really hasn't made any Kinyonim. All he did was a Maisa Gzela Lechud, but not a Kinyon Gzela. For example, if he denies that he ever got this object, so he's holding it for his own, that's called a Gzela, and he's causing a loss to the Bailin, but he hasn't implemented any sort of Maisa Kinyon. He doesn't actually take the object out of its location. And he's chayv v'tashlum, because the Torah makes this Ganav into a mazik. The Torah says that just like your mazik, you destroy someone's object and therefore cause him a loss. Here too, by denying him access to his object, even though you didn't take it, you are causing him a loss and therefore you're a mazik. Once you're a mazik, you're chayv even for onsen. But you're not a baal ha-ha. You're not a bailim. You haven't implemented a kinyan gzela. So he says the following. Now we can understand Rabbeinu Tam. HaMishnah, the Mishnah which mentions Maveh, and Rabbeinu Tam says that the Shem Adam, meaning Gneva, is mentioned in the parasha. That's a Ganav as a Mazik, before he actually made a Kinyan Gzela. Like, for example, in the case of a Shomer who is Kofer B'Pikadon, he becomes a Ganav. He now is considered like an Adam HaMazik. And that's going to appear in our Mishnah before Hever, because the Torah mentions that Ganav before Hever in the parasha of Mishpatim. And this is all based on the fact that the Torah considers a Kofer B'Pikadon to be a Ganav, or for that matter, the Torah considers a Ganav to be a Mazik in any case where he prevents the Bailim from having access to his object, but he has not implemented a Maisa Gneva. A Kinyan Gzneva. Ulam, Rabbi Chiya, who adds the case of Ganav to the list, he's not repeating what it says in the Mishnah about Maveh. This is not a repetition. But rather, he's talking about the full-fledged Ganav that incurs a Chiyuv HaShavas HaGzela because of Kinyan HaGzela. And that's the case of Rabbi Chiya that he adds to his list of Avos. So we have the list in our Mishnah of Maveh, that's the lowercase Gazlan, meaning that's a Gazlan who was basically a Mazik, but he did not implement a Kinyan Gzela. And then Reb Chiya adds a Ganav who's in the full category of a Ganav. He implemented not just a Maisa Gneva, but also Kinyane Gneva. He now has acquired ownership on the object. And for example, if you ask me my nafkemina, well, the nafkemina is going to be whether a shomer who is shaleach yad b'pikanon would be chayev to pay a higher value if the object went up in value at the time of the pshia. The answer is he's no longer a shomer. Why? Because he made a kinyan on the object. He's a full-fledged ganov as a result of shlichus yad b'pikanon. I'll call upon him in the next paragraph of Nimtzeinu Lemeidim to Megana Vegasin Yeshnei Dine Chiv Chad Chiv Ashavas Etzem Agzela Shebal Yedei Kinyone Gzela Veshenis Dal Maisa Gzela Bilchud. The Torah considers him a Mazik. The Kofer B'Pikadon Kevon De Betera Asil Yalu. Which category of a Ganav are we going to subsume Kofer B'Pikadon under? It's a Tera Asil Yade, which means that he never made a kinyan. It came into his rishus, not because he took it into his rishus, but it was given to him in his rishus, so there's no kinyan gzela. And therefore, his chiyuv can only be that of a mazik. But he's not chayuv as a gazlan in the classic sense of kinyan gzela. He's a gazlan in the sense that he's a mazik. And that's going to be the case of kofer v'pikod. Now, on both sides, we're going to put this on the side for a moment. Now, let's go back to the first Rashi of Masechta Sanhedrin, which is the Rashi that we wanted to understand. The Mishnah differentiates between Dini Momenos and Gzelos. So Rashi wants to tell you, well, what is Gzelos? What does the Mishnah mean by Gzelos? It's actually the second Rashi of the Masechta. Yeah, Rashi says, Kofer b'pikada misha sholach bo yad habigazlan. So we ask two questions. If Rashi wants to tell you that even a shomer is a gazlan, then Rashi could have had his choice of either kofer b'pikadon, who's called a gazlan, or sholeach yad b'pikadon, who's called a gazlan. Then Rashi goes on to give you the classic case of a gazlan, hachotef miyad chavero. So Rashi apparently wants to add a new category of a gazlan. It's a big chiddush. And it's a court case about someone who will find out later that he was a shomer and the object was deposited in his possession. We'll find out later after the Edom testified. But right now, he denies it. And if he denies it, then this is going to be a gzela case. And it requires three judges under the law of gzelos b'shlosha. Why does Rashi have to add sholech yad b'pikadon? Forget about Sholeach Yad B'Pikadon. The very moment that he was Kofer B'Pikadon, Omer Rav Sheisha is Kofer B'Pikadon, Havelei Gazlan. He's Chai B'Onsu. So if he's called a Gazlan, then the very moment that he's Kofer B'Pikadon, that makes it into a case of Gzela, because a Kofer B'Pikadon is called a Gzela. And you could ask the question in the reverse. Once Rashi introduces Sholeach Bo Yad, then Sholeach Bo Yad makes him into a Gazlan. Why did Rashi need Kofer B'Pikadon? So now we go back to page 3, page Gimel. Ulefi zeh asi shapir. Now we can explain Rashi at the beginning of Sanhedrin. Shekos of the kof b'kod mishin sholach bo yad, havi gazlan. Now you'll ask, but Rav Sheshes in Bava Kama Kufheim and Beis says that a kof b'kod nasa gazlan. So why does Rashi have to feel compelled to add mishin sholach bo yad? Ulam la mevura, according to everything we've explained, then we could figure out Rashi. Kofer b'pikadon, that's a case of batera osiliado, means he's lacking kinyon gzela. So the reason why he's chayav is not because he's a gazlan, but rather because he's a shomer who is kofer b'pikadon. The Torah considers him like a gazlan. He's not really a gazlan. It's hetera osiliado. There's no kinyon gzela. He's what you call a lowercase gazlan. He's chayav to return the object or its value, even in a case where the thunder, the lightning strikes, and it's an onus. And what makes him into a mazik? The kfir itself, the fact that he denied that he had received the object from the mafkid. Well, Rashi says, you know what? That's not really included in Gzela. That's included in another category of the Mishnah. Look at the next line in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Nezek, etc., etc., Bishlosha. That if I sue you for damages, I need a court of three. Well, if Gzela is a case of kofe v'pikadon, then that's called mazik. That's called nezek. When I sue this shomer for damages, he's paying because he was a mazik. What was he? He was actually a kofer b'pikadon. He denied that he ever received this pikadon. Well, Rav Sheshet says that kofer pikadon is called a mazik. But what, right? He's called a gazlan. But what kind of gazlan is he called? Not the gazlan of kinyanei gzeila, because this is hetera asi liyada kofer b'pikadon, but rather the gazlan of shomrim, the ganav of shomrim who's called a mazik. The Torah considers him like a mazik. Well, we already have in the Mishnah the case of mazik. There's no need for the Mishnah to repeat mazik when we have that in the Mishnah. So what is gzeila that goes beyond mazik? The answer cannot be kofer b'pikadon. Says Rashi, you're going to have to add another element into the equation, namely what? Sholeach yad b'pikadon. Once he's a sholeach yad b'pikadon, then he becomes a gazlan in the full sense, meaning he implemented a maisa gzela. He took it into his own possession. That's called a kinyan gzela. So he says the following, Umishum Hachi, the last four lines in this paragraph, Lufi Zeh, Svir Leila Rashi, the Kofri, Kon Shalosh Shalach, Bayad Havi, Bechlau, Mai, the Tnan, the Mishnah, Nezek, Bechatzi, Nezek. The Mishnah has the case of Nezek, where I sue you for my loss of possession. I lost something of value, you have to pay me for that, you have to compensate me because you caused me a loss. That's called Nezek. And in the case of a gazlan who's a mazik, meaning a gazlan who is basically holding on to someone else's object, but he never made a kinyan on the object, and the Torah says in such a case he's considered like a gazlan. Well, what kind of gazlan is he considered? The answer is he's considered a gazlan of a mazik. He's causing a hefsek to someone. Does everybody see that point? This is a very crucial point. The overlap, conceptually, between mazik and gazlan is that in both cases you are causing a loss, a monetary loss to someone. Nezek, because you destroyed his object. And gazlan, because you're holding on to his object and you refuse to cough it up. You don't want to give it back to him. Under those circumstances, you're a mazik. You're causing him a hefsek. Well, all that is included under the line in the Mishnah of nezikin, nezek, b'shlosha. You need three judges for a nezek. What was included under gzela? Again, you could have the classical case of a gazlan, where he just simply puts his hand into someone's pocket and takes it out. That's called michotef miyada. But is there a case of a gazlan who's a shomer? He's not a mazik, but he's a shomer. And the only case where you can have a shomer who becomes a full-fledged gazlan is the case of sholeach yad b'pikadon. Hence, Rashi adds to kofer b'pikadon, Vishalech Mishashalach Boyad Havi Gazlan. What do you mean Mishashalach Boyad Havi Gazlan? He's already a Gazlan from the moment that he was Kofer Bibikadon. Haraya, he's Chayv and Onsim. A Shomer is not Chayv and Onsim, but a Kofer Bibikadon is Chayv and Onsim. Name, you're right, he's a Gazlan, but he's only a Gazlan because the Torah considered him like a Gazlan. He's not a real Gazlan, he's not the real thing. He is an imitation of a Gazlan. This is a facsimile Gazlan. Why? Because since he's denying that he ever got the object, he's telling the violin, back off, this is not yours, it's mine. You have no access to it. That's a mazik. That's already included in the Mishnah mazik. There's no reason for Rashi to give this as an example of gazlan. If he's just kofer v'pikadon, call him a mazik, but don't call him a gazlan. Because in effect, the reason why he's chayav as a gazlan is only because he's a mazik. But we're still left with a problem. Because sholeach yad b'pikadon is a maisa gzela with a kinyan gzela. So why did Rashi have to mention kofer b'pikadon? Why didn't Rashi just scratch all these words, kofer b'pikadon, and just start with sholeach yad b'pikadon? If Rashi wants to find a case where a shomer is chayav as a gazlan, he should have given me the case of sholeach yad, because once he takes the object and he relocates it for his purposes, he's going to use the object. That's called kinyan gzela. That would fit on the gzelos. But Rashi didn't have to add kofer b'pikadon. So again, if we're asking the question why Rashi had to tag on sholeach yad b'pikadon to kofer b'pikadon, he wouldn't suffice, it wouldn't be enough for Rashi to say kofer b'pikadon. That's because kofer b'pikadon is basically a mazik. He's not a gazlan. He has never implemented kinyan gzeila, who is osi liyadeh v'hetera. All he did was make a claim in Bezdin, which in effect says, buddy, bug off, back off. You're not going to get your object back. That makes him into a mazik. But it doesn't make him into a gazlan in the sense of kinyan gzeila. Chotef miyad chavera, alright, that's a case of kinyan gzeila. So kofa b'kon alone can't stand alone, according to Rashi, because that comes under mazik. The Mishnah has mazik. What makes it into gzela is the fact that after he was kofer bibikadon, then he was sholeach yad. So first at stage T1, he denied the claim in Bezdin. He said, I never got a horse from you. And then at time T2, he went back to the stables and he starts riding the horse. That's called sholeach yad. Rashi could not suffice with kofer bibikadon because kofer bibikadon is a mazik, he's not a gazlan. He only becomes a gazlan when he implements a kinyan gzeila. When does he do that? When he gets home and he rides the horse. That's called sholeach yad b'pikad. He takes the object for himself. So we're halfway there. More than halfway. But now we have to ask the other half, the flip side. Why does Rashi have to tag on kofer b'pikadah? Why didn't Rashi suffice it by saying Misha Shalach Bo Yad? Because Shlichas Yad is a full-fledged gazlan. So if Rashi is looking high and low for a case where a shomer became a gazlan, he should have just simply quoted the case of Shlichas Yad Bikadam, because Shlichas Yad Bikadam makes him a full-fledged gazlan with a Maisa Gzela. So for this, we have two paragraphs. The paragraph on the bottom right of page Gimel, which is Vehine, and the paragraph on the bottom left, which is Ume Ata. So let's see if we can understand what the Gvuras Yitzchak is going to try to accomplish in these two paragraphs. How does he pull off, you know, pull a rabbit has of hat that Rashi is interested in combining together with Shlichas Yad Pikadon, Kofer B'Pikadon. So let's start with one premise, which I think is a pretty straightforward premise. Sholeach Yad B'Pikadon, he does a Maisa Gneva, he does a Kinyan Gzela. He is a gazlan in the full sense of the term. So Rashi is not so excited about simply mentioning Sholeach Yad B'Pikadon, because that is a Maisa Gzela with a Kinyan Gzela. That's a full-fledged gazlan. And that's going to be just another permutation, if you will, of Chotef Miyad Chavera. There's no like Chiddush over here in Sholeach Yad B'Pikadon. So for example, if I take your horse and start riding your horse, I become a gazlan. So that's like grabbing onto something and doing a Kinyan and taking it for yourself. Rashi wants to find a chiddush in Hilcha Shomrim, which makes the shomer into a gazlan. And for that, Rashi needs to start with kofer b'pikadon and then add shalach bo yad. So again, we're not there yet, but we're on the way. What we're saying is that Rashi would not suffice with shalach yad b'pikadon because adarav, that's too much of a gazlan. That is a real classic gazlan with a maisa kinyan gzela. Rashi wants to find some chiddush here that we can judge this as a gzela case, even though he's really a shomer. So Rashi now is going to combine kofer v'pikadon with shalach yad. In other words, he came to Bezdin, he denied the claim that he had received the horse, and then he went home and he starts riding the horse. And then the Edom came in, obviously, to testify. So here, he introduces a new concept, or at least it's new in this context, called Lemafreya. Lemafreya translates into English, as you know, as retroactive. It's a very dangerous word in halacha because people throw it around and sometimes they're not careful about it. Yeah, oh, just throw in the word lemafreya. I'm going to give a shiur at 11:45 in Ksubis about the word lemafreya. And there's somebody who's going to be accused of using the word lemafreya in an improper way when it doesn't deserve to be there. So you got to be careful when you use the word lemafreya. Let me give you the bottom line. He starts with kofer b'pikadon. At this point in time, we'll call it time T1, he has not acquired the object. He did not implement a kinyan gzela. Then he goes home after being kofer b'kadon, and he rides the horse. He sholeach yad. Now he has a maisa gzela with a kinyan gzela. From what point in time does he own the object? What would be your intuitive response to that question? Did he own the object at the time of T1, namely when he was kofer b'pikadon, or at the time of T2 when he was sholech yad b'pikadon? T2? No, there's a lemafreya. Lemafreya means the following: that kofer b'pikadon, although there was no kinyan gzela, is the beginning of a process that culminates with shlichas yad b'pikadon. We're going to now integrate stage one of kofer b'pikadon with stage two of shalech yad b'pikadon, and we're going to apply the principle of l'mafreya. So for example, if you want to underline again, because we don't have time to go through every word here, if you want to underline the key words over here, he says the following. He says on line 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, Kevon de Behetera Osi Liado, we're going to say that in the case of Kofer Bipikado, Lochashiv Gazlan, even though he wants to hold on to it, when does he become a Gazlan? Ashi Yishlofo Yad. No, that's not how it works. And now if you want to fast forward again, only for the sake of brevity, of finding the time to do all this, towards the end of the paragraph, we'll count up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines up before the end of the paragraph. Afal gavda kfir l'chud lo sagi l'ashvuye gazlan. Even though I grant you the premise that we've been emphasizing over and over again, that since in the case of kfira, it is though he's only a mazik kind of gazlan, and so far as he's not returning the object to its owner, he's being ma'akev the object, so that level of gzela makes him into a mazik. However, kol she'achar kach sholach bo yad, if he goes home and he uses the object, hareze mahani she'ose gazlan l'mafreya mishas kfira. Do you see those words? Again, if you're eager to see the words inside, which I'm always pushing for that agenda, you should underline these amazing words. He's saying the following: that you and I would have said he's not a gazlan until he sholeach yad. Nein, he's kofer b'pikadon, and if later on he uses the object, then kfira was the beginning of his gzela. His kinyan gzela is kind of like an integration of A plus B. It's an integration of kfira, which in and of itself is not sufficient, but when it culminates in shlichas bo yad, then the kfir itself is the gzela. Again, it's not just the kfir per se. I don't want to say that we put kfir into a box. You know, he comes to the bezdin, he denies that he ever got this horse, but that denial is already the in potential. You know, it's hanging. It's sort of there in the waiting to it's like the horse that's the bull that's locked up and waiting. Just remove the barrier and it goes shooting out, right? It becomes gzela when he finishes the job by being sholeach yad b'pikadon. Sholeach yad b'pikadon is not viewed as something independent, but it's rather finishing the original job that he started with kfira. And now l'mafreya, once he implements the shlichus yad, the kfira itself is considered a gazlan. He is a gazlan mishas kfira. Umeata in the next paragraph, osi shapid divrei Rashi. Why does Rashi need both kofir b'pikadon and shlichus yad b'pikadon? Lo tikshi, you could ask the question: im shalach bo yad, arei nasa gazlan mitam shlichus yad, lama le kofer b'pikadon? Why did Rashi have to add kofer b'pikadon? Again, we knew why Rashi wouldn't have stopped with kfir's kofer b'pikadon, because that's a mazik, and that's included in the next part of the Mishnah. That's not a gazlan. But why did Rashi not just simply mention shalach yad b'pikadon? That makes him into a gazlan. Why did he need kofer b'pikadon? Now we can answer this. He's going to say now, Hechad Kof Vikor V'Akach Sholf Boyad Harei Nasa Gazel Mafrei Mishas Kfira. Rashi wants to tell you that within the structure, within the framework of Shomrim, a Shomer can become a Gazlan even if he was Kofer B'Bikadon, if later on he so to speak, brings this process to its fruition by being Sholeach Yad B'Bikadon. So he begins the process with Kofer B'Bikadon. And now Rashi has a chiddush for you that even a kofer b'bikadon might become a gazlan when he sholeach yad subsequently. Again, if Rashi would have said sholeach yad b'bikadon, when at what time does he become a gazlan? He only becomes a gazlan after he was sholeach yad b'bikadon. That's a repetition of gazlan. That's exactly what chotef miyad chaver is all about. He grabs it, he takes it out of the rishus of the bialim into his own rishus. Classic zela, kinyan zela, and the kinyan is only effectuated from the moment that he was sholeach yad b'pikadon. But Rashi wants to tell you a big chiddush. Rashi wants to tell you that in a certain case he can be chayav as a gazlan from the moment of kfira b'pikadon, even though you'll tell me, well, kfira b'pikadon is not a gzela, it's only a mazik halacha. But the answer is no. We upgraded l'mafreya to the status of a gazlan through the shlichus yad. So we have A plus B, and after B, meaning shlichus yad, then retroactively, A itself becomes a Kenyan Gzela. And that's what he writes in the last three lines, last four lines. He writes, Ulam, Hecha the Shalt Bayad Acherkach, if he goes home after the Kfir Vikodin Ani Yisholeth Yad, Hareze Mahani, that works, Shalom Afreya Mishasa Kfira, Yia Ganov, Im Kenyan Gzela, Kikola Gazlonin. Unbelievable. There's a case where at the moment of Kfir B'Kadon, he becomes a full-fledged Gazlan, as if he had implemented Kinyan Gzela. Where's the Kinyan Gzela? The answer is that afterwards, later, he's going to be Sholeach Yad B'Kadon. Once he's Sholeach Yad B'Kadon L'Mafreya, he becomes a Ganav with all full-fledged status, a Ganav with Kinyan Gzela from the time of the Kfira. So if the Kfira is followed up, if you will, by a shlichas yad b'pikadon, then from the time of the kfira operating with the principle of mafreya, he becomes a gazlan with kinyani gzela. And that's Rashi. Very beautiful. Now, do you have page 4? All right, we don't have too much time, but what I'm going to try to accomplish in the next 4 minutes that we have is to outline or highlight a few lines here that'll give us a little bit more of an insight into this Rashi that we're working so hard. And to do that, I'm going to ask you to underline 4 lines. 2 of them are in the paragraph Vehine, which is the second paragraph on page 4 on the right column. Vehine b'chidushi aran. And if you're going to fast forward about 4 lines, he says the following. B'divrei Rashi, line 5, B'arnu, this really, the kofer b'pikadon, lo avi b'chlal gzelos, kevon di ein lo kinyoni gzelo ve'eno ela mazik. Okay? So according to our understanding of Rashi, this is the old Be'eteros Iliado principle, kofer b'pikadon is not really a gazlan. He's a mazik, but he's not a gazlan. What makes him into a gazlan? Sholeach yad b'pikadon. So if you look at the last few lines in this paragraph, he says, "King Tikshe, lama lo nokat Rashi sholeach yad greida." Why didn't Rashi just simply say sholeach yad? So we explained that Rashi wants to come up with a new chiddush here of l'mafreya. Well, first Rashi should tell me the simple pshat that sholeach yad is a gazlan. Why does he start with kofer b'pikadon? And to answer this question, we're going to fast forward to the paragraph ulafi zeh on the left column. Second line, the Nira, the Rashi, Sover, the Shlichus Yad, Havi Kikol, Gzela, the Alma. That there's no difference between any Gzela, meaning Chotef, Miyad, Chavero, in the case of Shlichus Yad. Is Hareza Nechlal, the Mashkos of Rashi, a Chotef, Miyad, Chavero, Avi Gazlan. Since Rashi says, when you grab something from your friend, you're a Gazlan. Hence, I understand that Sholeach Yad, Vipikonon, is a Gazlan. So Rashi therefore wants to give me some sort of a chiddush that chotef that a shomer is not a chotef miyad chavero, and therefore he's not a classic gazlan, but rather he's a kofer b'pikadon. And then if you fast forward another 2 lines, Elakati tzorchim my time Rashi lo mona toin time is gazlan davi chidish miyuchad beparshas shomrim. Now, if a person claims that he was that the object was stolen from him, he's considered like a gazlan. Okay, that's a new kasha, and that he's going to address during the rest of the balances of this essay. He's going to address that. I'm not committed to go through the balance of this essay. But what we do understand, again, we don't have an answer yet to the question why Rashi can quote the case of Toin Tanis Gazlan, but why Rashi had to introduce Kofir V'Pikadon. Rashi wasn't satisfied simply to mention Sholeach Yad V'Pikadon, because Sholeach Yad V'Pikadon is a classic case of a full-fledged Gazlan. It's exactly identical to Chotef Yad V'Yad Chavero, because he took it out of his rishus. That's a kinyan gzeila. Rashi wants to add a new chiddush in the parsha of Shomrim, and that new chiddush is that even though a kofer v'pikadon v'atera osi liyado is not a gazlan, he's only a mazik, he could become a gazlan if he follows up with what? With sholeach yad v'pikadon. And that's based on the principle of limafreya. Okay, Rabosei, so we're going to stop here. And b'li neder, we'll find out exactly when is a good time next week. Wednesday seems to be pretty good for most of the Olam. And then we have to decide between Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. We're trying to juggle this all in a way that we can get the most people satisfied. All right, then? I'll see you tomorrow.